antidote to the predictable talk radio show. Kilmeade and Friends.
He spent the bulk of his career defending the country. He is Navy SEAL Chris Kyle. He's just written a book, his autobiography, called The American Sniper. This is the autobiography of the most lethal sniper in U.S. military history, and that's what the Navy's saying. Chris Kyle joins us, and listen to what he's done before you even hear him talk. In his 10 years from 99 to 09 with the SEAL team, he served four combat tours in Iraq and elsewhere, awarded two Silver Stars, five Bronze Stars with Valor, as well as other commendations. Chris is talking about his book and SEAL Team 3 in particular, and the great work he and his colleagues did to win the war in Iraq. Chris, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Chris, first off, let me just put the microphone right in front of you. That's probably better.
All right.
First off, why did you become a SEAL?
I grew up always wanting to be in the military. Grew up very patriotic and felt like it was every young man's duty to serve your country. My dad, he was rejected from Vietnam. He went to, you know, when they were doing the draft, he figured he'd go enlist. Well, he'd had the knee surgeries in high school football accident, and he was turned down medical board. And I saw how devastated he was, you know, from telling me the stories after I got old enough to understand. I just brought up extremely patriotic, wanted to be in the military.
You talk about joining, and you say, okay, I'm going to go to the mall, and all the recruiting stations are there. You got the Navy, the Marine, you got the Navy, the Marines were separate. Even though the Marines are part of the Navy, Marines are a separate entrance, the Army and the Air Force. So you're waiting for the Marines. They're out to lunch, and the Army guy, the Navy guy calls you in, right?
Well, first the Army did.
The Army guy called you in.
And because I knew about Special Forces, you know, the Green Berets. So I wanted to find out about going into that. At the time, you had to be an E5, which means I'd had to do several years in the military before I could do it. So I kind of walked out of the office thinking, all right, well, I can at least go be a Ranger. Well, now, you know, that was looking at the military from the outside. Now, after being in, I know the Rangers are dang good. Not that they were any step at all below Special Forces. Well, at the time, I was thinking, well, I don't want to be just a Ranger. So when I left, then the Navy recruiter pulled me in and goes, you can come over here. You can be a SEAL right now. So I thought, sounds good. Tell me about them.
And you went in there. And you went in. And then you were able to go in. First, they said you can't go in because your elbow's all screwed up because of a rodeo accident. And then they later called you back and said, come on in. The training, how do you describe, without getting into too much detail, you do get into detail in the book. It's brutal. It's taxing physically and mentally.
Right. I mean, the way I describe to everybody is it's 7 months long, wet and sandy, standing with your feet shoulder width apart, getting kicked in the junk every day for 7 months. It's bad. I mean, I went in not knowing hardly anything about the water.
They waterboard you, by the way, right?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. They waterboard you. They make you walk through tear gas, which they say is usually people are just frozen when that happens.
Well, you get that in regular boot camp, too. You get your exposure to that. But it's definitely tough. And not being raised around the water, getting thrown into this to where the only time you go dive, it's cold and it's dark. You can't even see the hand in front of your face.
Right.
Stuff bumping into you. And I'll walk around a mud puddle now.
You're not into it. You're in 99, you're in, and you're a full-blown Navy SEAL. How did that feel?
I was extremely proud. And at the time, you know, the wars hadn't broke out yet. We weren't attacked. So my mom and dad, they were extremely proud, but the day I graduated BUDS, the boot camp to be a SEAL, my mom started crying. She already thought, okay, well, my son's going to war. You know, you hear all the rumors, you think SEALs are always doing these black ops and super classified.
Right. 2001 hits, you're stateside. You hear about it. They said, you know, you better report to the base. But you don't go to Afghanistan, you go to Iraq.
Right. I didn't even leave until 2003.
And when you did get your mission, what point in the war?
I'm sorry?
What point in the war did you go? Were you over there from the invasion?
Yes, sir. I went over prior to the invasion. We went over in the wintertime. In fact, when it kicked off in March, that was our time to come home. So we thought, we thought we were going to completely miss the war. Our job was taking down the ships that were smuggling the oil, you know, enforcing the embargo that was over there. And we did that for 6 months and thought, okay, the war's coming, but we're not going to be a part of it. And then we got extended to actually kick off the war.
I'm talking to Chris Kyle. He's the author of American Sniper. You got to go get this book. What he's done for this country is staggering. Chris, when you actually go to war, you're on land. Where and what city were you first called to action in?
Well, we started in Kuwait and then went into Al-Fal, is where the oil fields were. Before the war actually kicked off, we took down the oil fields, metering and manifold stations, and then the we call them the GOPLATs, the Gulf Oil Platforms.
Because in 93, in the first Persian Gulf War, that's the first thing they blew up, right?
Exactly. So that was the main job before the invasion could start. We had to make sure the oil was safe, and then all of a sudden the Tomahawks came over and all the forces launched.
That'll make some people safe and some people hurt. So the forces launch, and then when you have to, your mission changes to what?
Yeah, then we're just trying to, you know, strategic targets, take out key elements that make the invasion go a little bit better for the Marines and the soldiers. Not that we're going to make it easy on them, but just trying to make it somewhat better.
The Saddam Fedayeen, when were you first realized there's a special forces force against you and that maybe you guys didn't anticipate?
When we landed on Al-Fal, we were told that we wouldn't really get a whole lot of resistance. But as we landed, they weren't expecting us to come from the air and land right in the middle of the oil field. They thought we were going to come from the outside driving in. They were completely surrounded that oil field in bunkers and trenches. So as soon as we landed, they had us completely surrounded, which also caused confusion on them and helped us out.
Well, Nasiriyah was also a big ambush point, correct?
Yes.
And where were you there in that? Were you there?
We were there. That was also one of the things that it was a little tension with us because the Marines had their own block of area in there. We had our block, and our CO was telling us, you know, hey, you can't go out. He was more worried about trying to 100% success, zero casualties.
Right. But when the insurgency becomes a reality, and it was clear it's not going to be a quick war, one of the main battles that America knows and the military will study is the takedown of Ramadi, the one that didn't happen and the one ultimately happened. What was your role there?
I was a sniper going out helping the Army build their COPS, their combat outpost. They didn't want to take it down like they did Fallujah. They thought there was too much collateral damage. So we started putting in these installations throughout the city. And their big plan was you inundate the city with U.S. troops. They get used to seeing us. The terrorists don't have any room to maneuver. And then the civilian population get used to seeing us. We make friends with them, and they'll start to tell.
When did you first start putting your sniper skills into action?
In Fallujah.
In Fallujah.
In 04.
And what was it like? You do describe in detail in your book, Chris Kyle, the first time you lined somebody up and took them out. What was the scenario and killed them?
That was, I wasn't a sniper at that time. I was on a sniper rifle, but a woman came out and the Marines were coming into the city. She was coming out to act like, you know, she was going to greet them, but she actually had a grenade.
And you knew that, and they didn't.
Right.
And also, wasn't there a child in the street at the time as well?
Yes.
So you knew you had to take action.
Yes.
And you saved those, was it Marines' lives by doing that?
Right. She was trying to walk to the Marines to act like, you know, come on into the city, we're welcoming you here, but she was just trying to lure them in close. So she already had the pin pulled.
Right. And what was that like? How did it feel for the first time?
It was nerve-wracking. That's when I didn't know if I would be able to kill someone. And all of a sudden, you know, you're faced with a decision. You either have to pull the trigger and kill this person or sit here and watch your guys die.
Wow. Listen, when we come back, I want to talk to you more about this and also bring in your co-author, Jim DeFelice is here.
Yes.
Correct?
Yes,
so
yes.
Jim helped put you this together with Scott McEwen. And the book is phenomenal. I'm sure it's going to be a bestseller. American Sniper, the autobiography of the most lethal sniper in U.S. military history. And this generation. We're not talking about a World War II or something you're going to see in the History Channel. He made history. Back with more with Chris Kyle on Kill, Meet, and Friends.
missed part of the show? Don't panic. Get the podcasts online at KillmeadeandFriends.com.